to Elske.
Of course, thank you.
Who has a different perspective because she is a lawyer, but we are curious to learn from that too.
Yes. Yes, I've been working on a number of transparency cases together with my colleague Honor Brouwer, which some of you may know from the transparency cases that have been dealt with in the past. And today I would like to share our views on the current trends in case law for the European courts on the basis of our experience in the cases that we've been dealing with. I will mainly focus on case law on the international relations exception and on case law on the exception in relation to personal data, which are both relied on extensively by the institutions in order to refuse access to documents. And I will try to incorporate some tips and tricks in the while going along, which may be of use for you to successfully obtain access to documents. When international relations are concerned, institutions seem very reluctant in providing access to documents, and also the courts appear to be hesitant in limiting the discretion of the institution in applying the international relations exception. There are two recent transparency cases in relation to the field of international relations, which were rendered in May 2012 and March 2013. And these cases were both initiated by a member of the European Parliament, Sophie Innetveld. The first case concerned a request for access to an opinion of the Council's legal service on a recommendation for the opening of negotiations between the EU and the US for the SWIFT agreement. The Council refused this request by invoking the international relations exception. The General Court set aside applicants' arguments that international relations were actually not concerned here because the document related to the legal basis for starting the negotiations and was not actually related to international relations as such. But after examining the document itself, the court followed the Council and stated that certain part would reveal strategic objectives of the EU and that disclosure of negotiation directives, which were also part of the documents requested while negotiations were ongoing, would potentially be exploited by a negotiation partner of the EU, and therefore disclosure of these documents could weaken the EU's negotiation position and thereby harm international relations, according to the court. An interesting point was that the applicant argued also that parts of these documents were made public by the Council itself and also in discussions in the Parliament, and that therefore those parts should at least be made available. But the court considered that the fact that these documents had, or that this content was made available, was irrelevant for the conclusion that international relations were at stake. The Council actually lodged an appeal against this judgment, not necessarily because of these first considerations, but the court did decide that parts of the document that indeed related to this legal basis for the negotiations should have been revealed. And the Council is of the opinion that there's an intertwined link between the legal basis and international relations, and that internal discussion between the institutions on the legal basis would actually also harm the international relations in this respect. But the court indicated that allowing divergent points of view between institutions on legal basis would actually enhance open debates on the legality of decision-making process. The second case concerned a request by Sophie Innetveld to the Commission for documents relating to the negotiations of the anti-counterfeit trade agreement. Also in this case, again, the Commission based its refusal for request to access on the international relations exception. In this case, a confidentiality agreement was concluded between negotiating parties, and according to the court, disclosure of negotiation positions could therefore harm mutual trust between the negotiating parties. And it considered that even if only the EU's position would be revealed without revealing any of the positions of the other parties, still, while negotiations were ongoing, the EU's position could be negatively affected, and therefore reliance on the international relations exception was allowed in this case. The court did examine each requested document individually in order to determine whether the Commission had assessed that the content of the document itself actually related to international relations and related to negotiations. And in some instances, it was actually considered that this was not the case. So, lessons to be learned from these cases. To start with, I think it appears from these cases that although the General Court seems to be willing to accept a fairly broad interpretation of the international relations exception as soon as negotiations seem to be involved, it is on the other hand not hesitant to itself conduct a really substantial review on the documents that are requested. It really goes through the file and examines all documents that are considered to be covered by an exception according to the institutions. This review is, I think, considered a positive point. And even though in principle one is not obliged to state reasons for a request for access to documents, in order to ensure to increase the chances that such a substantive review will indeed be conducted by a court, I think it will be useful to already in the primary request of an access try to be as specific as possible in relation to each individual document why you would believe that access to these documents should be granted in this case. And I think in this respect it's also it would be more useful to be very specific in your request, not requesting an entire file document, but rather to request certain documents for which you're sure that you have an interest. I agree that it might be difficult to determine which are actually the documents you're requested, but still, to be as specific as possible would really be desirable in order to increase the chances of success. I think, secondly, these cases demonstrate an intention of the Council and the Commission to almost create a categorical exception when it comes to refusal to negotiation directives. The institutions seem to try to elevate themselves from an obligation to demonstrate a reasonable risk that international relations will actually be undermined. And in this respect, we had a hearing less than a month ago in another transparency case relating to international relations exception for our client, Professor Besseling. And also there, the Council refused to grant access to negotiation directives relating to the negotiations of the EU's accession to the European Convention of Human Rights. And in that case, it was interesting that the content of some of these drafts were actually made public through not necessarily the directives itself, but the content had been discussed in documents of Parliament and documents of the Council. And it appeared from these documents that the content actually did not relate to issues that were subject to negotiations. And therefore, I think it will be interesting to see whether, on the basis of this, of a substantial examination by the court, it will decide that access should have been granted, or whether it will uphold a more general approach as presented by the Council, that any negotiation directive, refusal to any negotiation directive should be accepted. There's also a link in this regard with the Swift case, the first case that I mentioned, where the court refused to consider that parts of the requested documents had already been made available by the institution. As I said, this was also the case in the Besseling case. And I feel that while it's understandable that in case of illegal publication of a document, such illegal publication might not be necessarily usable in order to force an institution to disclose a document when it has reasonable grounds to rely on an exception, I think the fact that certain content has been disclosed legally by the institution itself, or possibly by national authorities, should cause doubt on the existence of a risk that disclosure of these documents would undermine the interest at issue. One more comment to make before I turn to personal data. In relation to the Besseling case, although the personal interest of the requesting party for access to documents is formally irrelevant for the assessment of or whether or not to grant such a request, it may nevertheless be worthwhile to stress your capacity as a journalist and in that capacity seeking to promote debate on issues of public interest when requesting access to documents. pursuant to the fundamental right of freedom of expression, case law of the European Court of Human Rights has developed a right of access to governmental information of public interest for public watchdogs, such as journalists and academics, who seek to promote debates on issues of public interest. So whether the European courts will acknowledge a similar right in relation to the transparency regulation is to be seen, but I think considering the increased importance of fundamental right in the EU law via the Lisbon Treaty and the contemplated accession to the European Convention of Human Rights, it could not be excluded that some that these arguments may actually have a positive effect on your request for documents. So now we'll briefly turn to case law on the personal data exception. I think most of you might be aware that the court's approach towards access to documents in relation to personal data has entrenched substantially since the Bavarian Lager judgment, in which the court confirmed the Commission's refusal to reveal names of participants in lobbying meetings. In this case, the court ruled that neither the transparency regulation nor the personal data regulation 45/2001 prevailed over the other, and that therefore full application of both should be ensured. As a consequence, next to the usual tests applied under the transparency regulation, an applicant requesting transfer of personal data would now also have to demonstrate an express and legitimate justification for the necessity of this transfer. And the applicant should thereby show that the transfer of personal data would be proportionate for its aims. In that case, no such justification was in place, so nothing could be said about where the boundaries of this justification should be placed. There's been a more recent case, the Denemark case, which could be considered a test case in this respect. Dennekamp was a journalist as well, and he requested access to documents that indicated which members of the European Parliament were members of an additional pension scheme. The European Parliament refused access because the disclosure would be disproportionate for the aims put forward by Dennekamp. And Dennekamp had, however, quite substantially argued why his request was justified. He, for instance, indicated that this scheme was to a large extent financed by public funds, that the mandate for the members of parliament enabled them to influence the future of the financing of the scheme, and that in the past, parliament had actually voted several times on making up shortfall in the scheme. And according to Dennekamp, knowing who had a personal interest in the scheme would be of interest in light of transparency and accountability. I was not involved in this case myself, but it's a case that has been dealt with by Onno Brouwer, my colleague, and I understood from him that Dennekamp had also put forward that as a journalist, he should have been enabled to exercise a watchdog function on the over politicians of the European Parliament. The court, however, completely ignored this fact. It's also not mentioned in the in the case itself, so that's quite unfortunate. And I think if the Dennekamp case is an indication of how the institutions and the European courts will deal with the personal data exception in the future, it seems to have become practically impossible since the Bavarian Lager case to actually get access to personal data contained in documents of the institutions. But I think this should not necessarily stop us from trying to obtain this information. Otherwise, this case should rather be an incentive to further elaborate justifications for the transfer of these personal data and to keep emphasizing the watchdog roles which journalists should be able to play when it comes to making the EU accountable for its actions. Thank you for your attention. I'm going to